Jesus took Peter, John, and James and went up the mountain to pray. While he was praying, his face changed in appearance, and his clothing became dazzling white. And behold, two men were conversing with him, Moses and Elijah, who appeared in glory and spoke of his exodus that he was going to accomplish in Jerusalem. Peter and his companions had been overcome by sleep, but becoming fully awake, they saw his glory and the two men standing with him. As they were about to part from him, Peter said to Jesus, "Master, it is good that we are here. Let us make three tents, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." But he did not know what he was saying. While he was still speaking, a cloud came and cast a shadow over them, and they became frightened when they entered the cloud. Then from the cloud came a voice that said, "This is my chosen son. Listen to him." After the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone. They fell silent and did not at that time tell anyone what they had seen. The Gospel of the Lord. I think many of you know that my day job is I'm a high school teacher at St. Mary's, and I've learned some things on the job in the years that I've been there. And about 2 years ago, I discovered what I've since kind of identified as a secret weapon of evangelization. Because one of the difficulties that you have when you're trying to evangelize, trying to get somebody to have a conversion in which they really kind of change the way they see life, is if we talk about the spiritual life, if we have no experience of the spiritual life, you can't make sense of it, right? If I talk to somebody who really has no experience of trying to be a disciple or no experience of prayer, then they have no basis of reference, no frame of reference for what I'm trying to describe to them. So here's the secret weapon I discovered sort of by accident a couple of years ago. Is beauty. Right, beauty, I have come to believe, is the secret weapon of evangelization. And so I've started this thing at my school called Project Beauty. And the idea is this, that while I cannot replicate for you an experience of prayer or of the transformative power of the sacraments or what it's like to encounter in some little way God, right, I can invite you into an experience of beauty. And in fact, all of us, in various ways, have experienced beauty in our lives. And so I like to maybe lead my students into that experience of beauty. And right now, I can't necessarily recreate it for you, but I would ask you to call to mind really beautiful things that you've experienced in your life. We can experience it in a number of different ways. And one of the first insights we can have into beauty is, or maybe it's just a question we ask, What is beauty when we can use it to describe so many different things, so many different aspects of our experience? So for instance, if I ask you to call up the most beautiful things you've experienced in your life, that could take any number of forms. Maybe it's the experience of watching your child be born, right? Maybe it's the experience of marital bliss, right? Or maybe it's music, right? Maybe when I say, what's the most beautiful thing you've ever experienced, music comes to mind, and probably not just any music, right? Not the music that stirs the passions, but that music that's really beautiful, that sort of seems to elevate our hearts into heaven, or maybe even better, it seems like something from heaven has come down and pierced our hearts. For me, the strongest experience of beauty I have is when I'm in some beautiful place in nature, sort of enjoying God's creation. What comes to mind right now is like Yosemite National Park, and That's my greatest experience of beauty. And here's where I try to lead my students as we experience beauty in different ways, is when we reflect on our experience of that beauty. Very often there is an experience of sadness. And I know it's not just me, because I've had enough conversations with people that they know what I'm talking about, right? That those moments where we experience the most beautiful things, there is in it some sense of sadness that it provokes in us. Right? When I'm staying there in Yosemite National Park, I'm enjoying it and I'm glorifying the Lord, and my heart feels sort of inflamed with love and admiration for the Lord who created all this beauty. But there is also in me sort of a piercing sadness. And the only way I could even try to describe it is to say it's, even as I'm experiencing it, it's the recognition that I can't like get it all into me. And then eventually I'm going to have to leave, right? Or I could say that the sadness is in the fact that I want to stay here forever in this beauty. Because beauty does that to you, right? You want to stay here forever. But then if I stay here, I can't be, in the mountains of Washington or something like that, right? So even in this experience of beauty, even if I were to be able to stay here forever and sort of pull all this inside of me and never have to leave, then by the very fact, I exclude every other beautiful thing from my experience, right? And that's the best way that I could describe that ache. And I've come to call that the beauty wound, right? I also find that this is particularly experienced in music, right? Those really beautiful pieces of music that stir our soul and feel like they pierce our hearts, they especially create that ache, right? That's even a phrase we use. It's achingly beautiful. I call that the beauty wound. And here's what I think about the beauty wound. Here's why I think it happens and why we all have this experience, right? And this is why it's such a powerful evangelical tool, is because while I can't recreate an experience of prayer for you, I can invite you into an experience of beauty, which we've all had at some point in our life. And I can recall to your mind that ache, that beauty wound, which we've all experienced. I think it's this, is that when we really experience the truly beautiful things in life, whether they be from loving relationships with other people, or entering into God's creation, or the beautiful works of art that human beings produce, right, we are catching just fleeting glimpses of something better. We're catching these just fleeting glimpses, just these little glances, these little bitty looks behind the curtain, that tell us that there is a better life. That there is a happiness that we can only seem to just catch little glimpses of. And if we try to grasp onto it, it's always slipping away from our fingers, right? But those moments are so important to the human experience because they're the ones that remind us there is something more. And the sadness comes because as we experience it, we always feel it slipping away. Right? But if we reflect on these experiences of beauty, if we allow them not to just kind of come and go and say, well, that was nice, I wish I could have it back, but reflect on its meaning, I think it can have the effect of provoking in us a desire for a deeper, fuller way of living. Right? The beauty wound can actually provoke us to seek somehow more beauty. And to seek it maybe in a way that it won't pass away, it won't keep slipping out of our fingers. And I don't think it's a coincidence, you know, when I call it the beauty wound, I don't think it's a coincidence that some of the great spiritual doctors of the church, you know, the great prayers in the history of the church, sometimes use very similar language. One of my favorite saints is Saint John of the Cross, and he wrote this poem called The Spiritual Canticle. And in it, he talks about experiencing the love of God, and he describes it as a wound, right? And he says, in prayer, he's experienced God's love, but then God seems to withdraw. And this is a common theme that we find in the great mystics, right? That sometimes God overwhelms us with an experience of his glory, of his love, of his presence, but then he withdraws. And he describes it as being wounded, right? You've left me wounded, and now I seek you. Right? But St. John of the Cross responds correctly to that wound. When he experiences it, and it causes pain, it causes anguish almost, this aching that this love has now withdrawn, but he goes and seeks it. And he allows that wound to draw him into a seeking, into a different way of living. I bring all this up on today when we celebrate the Transfiguration. That's what we read in the Gospel, right? This kind of mysterious moment in the life of Jesus when Peter, James, and John go with him up a mountain, and they see him transfigured. And we almost have a sense, reading the Gospel, we have a sense that something happened that it's kind of difficult to explain, because even the wording is awkward, right? We said that he became glowing and his clothes became dazzling white. And we call it the Transfiguration, that in some sense, Peter, James, and John glimpsed Jesus' true glory. Right? They in a sense saw who Jesus really was. He pulled back the curtain for them and allowed them to see not just into more life or a longer life, but a better life and a different kind of life. Right? They saw what it is that Jesus is really carrying around in him, that divine light. They caught a glimpse of that. So why did the transfiguration happen? Why were Peter, James, and John permitted to see just for a moment this glimpse of the glory, the true beauty of Jesus Christ? There's a number of different answers that can be given, and one of the things that the church fathers tell us is that this was to strengthen them to be able to endure the scandal of the Lord's death. Right? They would be able to remember when they saw their Lord crucified and dead on the cross. They'd be able to kind of endure that scandal. And some of the church fathers talk about it, you know, the connection, because Moses and Elijah are speaking with Jesus about the passion he's about to suffer. And so then to see him transfigured, it allows us to always connect the death of Jesus with resurrection. We know that in Jesus, death is never separate from resurrection. Death always leads to life, right? And that life, that resurrection, that new, that better life is always present. But I like to think that maybe also part of the reason why Jesus allowed Peter, James, and John to see him transfigured in glory, and the reason that we're invited to share in that experience, is so that we can remember that there's something more that God has in store for us. When we talk about our judgment, right, and going either to reward or punishment, we talk about heaven, we need to remember that heaven is not just, when we talk about the resurrection, heaven is not just more of this life. Right? Pope Benedict, in his encyclical on hope, he talks about that. He says, we experience within ourselves this dissonance because we know death is a threat. We don't want to die. Right? Everything in us rebels against death. On the other hand, when we look at our experience of this life, if we just imagine this life spread on forever, that would be unbearable. Right? Because this life is not enough. And this life is not... does not provide us that true joy, that true happiness, that true share in the glory that God really has in store for us. So if we just imagine this life as never ending, that's not really that hopeful of a thing, right? But we look and we see Jesus transfigured in glory, and we remember that he intends for us to share somehow in this glory. That he intends for us to enter into him, into his resurrection, and to be transfigured. And we remember that the Lord actually has in store for us, truly, as St. Paul says, something that eye has not seen and ear has not heard. Right? We can't even really imagine what heaven is like. We can't even really imagine what the resurrection is going to be like for us. But we have little hints, right? We have little glimpses because we have the beauty wounds. And so I ask you to call to mind again those moments in your life where you've really experienced true beauty and felt moved by it, and remember the way it affects you. All right? And after today, don't ever let a real, authentic experience of beauty pass you by without meditating on it. Because what we're getting is, even if they're just glimpses, they're at least glimpses. Right? It gives us some little hint, some little sense of what the Lord has in store for us. And it teaches us, even if it hurts, even if it causes an aching in us, it teaches us not to be content or satisfied with this life here below. It teaches us, you know, even everybody knows this, even you go back to the ancient Greeks before Jesus ever came, every human being seeks happiness, right? We can't escape that. We all want happiness. It's just a question of where we seek it. And so those moments of beauty, right, or the transfiguration, or the moments of God's presence that we truly experience in prayer, they teach us not to be content with the things of this world. They teach us not to seek our happiness in things of this life, but to remember we were created for another life, a better life, a life that we've only just caught little glimpses of in our most beautiful experiences, our experiences of purest love, and that's what we need to yearn for, and that's what we need to strive for. And then we live out of that yearning, right? We live out of that desire to experience the glory of the Lord, to enter fully into the beauty of God in such a way that we experience no lack, we experience no absence, we experience no division, we experience no separation, but pure joy and rapture which does not pass away.